Welcome to Honey and the Hex. I'm Tatum.
And I'm Tansy.
And we're a sibling duo exploring the origins, traditions and intersections of folklore and where they lie today.
Each episode will bring you our learnings of myths, magic and mystery by shining a light on the past and how it's not always as distant as it seems.
Want to know how to get away with not paying your £1 million bill at the Langham and get a complimentary lifetime stay and soft towels? Be a ghost. Today we explore the Langham's sordid and illustrious history, mysterious guests, and the horror behind Room 333.
In the words of Stephen King, any big hotels have got scandals, just like every big hotel has got a ghost. Why? Hell, people come and go. Sometimes one of them will pop off in this room, heart attack or stroke or something like that. Hotels are superstitious places. No 13th floor or room 13, no mirrors on the back of the door you come through. The Langham is said to be one of the most haunted hotels in the world, and without a shadowy ghost of a doubt, the most haunted in London. The Langham is, I think it's 1C Portland Place, and up the road there's 33 Portland Place, which is a pretty famous house because there used to be so many wild parties there. It used to be owned, I don't know if it's still owned by Eddie Davenport, but I had he was like a fraudster that scammed loads of people out of their money. He used to own the house. I think he got it really suspiciously. Like he got it from the Sierra Leone embassy, and then he got it through kind of shady circumstances.
Right. Okay.
And he went to prison actually. So he's out now, but yeah, he used to own 33 Portland Place. I think he might actually still own it, I'm not sure. And I had a friend that lived at 33 Portland Place. So the Langham's at 1 Portland Place, and then we used to basically go to 33 Portland Place after like a wild night at the box. And we'd also go to the Langham. I didn't see any ghosts there yet. But my friend was basically getting this guy at Portland Place, and this guy was like, oh, I've got like a suite at the Langham. So, yeah. Jeez. So he was like, oh, I'll go back with him. Of course, why not? It's only up the road and I'll come back to the party later if you're still here, whatever. He basically woke up like after he passed out and he thought he needed the toilet. So he thought he was going into the toilet, but instead he left the room completely naked and like couldn't get back in the room. So he thought he was going into the bathroom, but actually
he was out, locked outside. Your friend?
Hayden. He said I could say that, by the way, because okay, I said I was doing a thing about the Langham.
I mean, that's very Hayden behaviour. Love you, Hayden.
So he had to go down to the lobby completely naked. Because the guy wouldn't answer, because obviously the guy must have been passed out as well. So he was like knocking up. I just thought it was so funny. Anyway, he never made it back to Portland Place that night. So it used to be pretty wild in London for us. But did you ever come to a party at Portland Place, the 33 one?
Yeah. Briefly.
Actually, they filmed loads of like things, like the King's Speech was filmed there. They've done loads of music videos. It's quite an iconic place. Very, very wild history there. So if you want to look it up, then yeah.
So of course, the Langham sees a lot of celebrities, a lot of artists, royalty. Some of my favourite guests who have stayed there is Lady Gaga and Princess Diana. It's a 5-star hotel. Rooms are obviously very expensive. One of the suites costs $24,000 a night. Prior to being a hotel, the building was once an extravagant mansion owned by the Foley family. They were very well-known members of London society, extremely wealthy and powerful. Unfortunately, Lord Foley was known to be very flashy with his cash and irresponsible with his funds, as were the other members of the family. His grandson gambled away most of the family fortune, and by 1811, Lord Foley was bankrupt.
Here steps in architect John Nash, who you may know designed the Royal Pavilion in Brighton, Marble Arch, and Buckingham Palace. As it happens, Lord Foley was in debt to John Nash, who had designed his country house, Whitley Court, and Foley owed him £70,000. In exchange for this debt, Nash seized the Foley Mansion in what he considers to be one of the most successful seizures of all of his career, basically.
Scissors?
Seizures.
Seizures. Like a seize.
Like a...
I mean, this isn't a video podcast, but we're just grabbing at the air right now.
Yeah, if like you could seize. See us. He is basically like, oh my God, I managed to get this whole mansion just for a debt of 70 grand. So,
jeez, yeah.
Yeah.
So Nash had a deal with Sir James Langham to design him a luxury and elegant new townhouse. And of course, Nash had acquired the perfect site, thanks to Lord Foley's handover. Mysteriously, the Foley family seems to have died out, and there's not much information about how this happened.
When I was researching Lord Foley, he was described as a spendthrift. And I just really like that word, spendthrift.
Mm.
Do we know any spendthrifts?
Well, I spend money I don't have in thrift shops.
You're a spendthrift.
Aren't you so?
No, I think it just means like really, really irresponsible with your money.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I probably am that as well.
Vocab of the day. Nash and Langham honestly got into such wild drama. Langham was extremely demanding with constant complaints. He was like, you know, the basement is damp. This is that. Yeah, I mean, standard things, I guess. But they did get into drama. There's like quite a lot of like articles you can read that have like quoted them both, which is really funny. Yeah. Somehow the mansion was completed and the Langham family moved in. They kept the house until 1833. It was then purchased by the Countess of Mansfield, who owned the property until 1860. It was then demolished to construct the Langham Hotel. So as we said, the Langham, it's a luxurious five-star hotel in Marylebone, London. Architect John Giles designed the building and it was constructed by Lucas Brothers between 1863 and 1865. The cost of building today would be equivalent to around £30 million. John Giles actually, after this, went on to design asylums. Great career, John Giles.
At the time, the hotel was considered Europe's first grand hotel, the largest and modern for its time. The opening was attended by many of Victorian London's high society, with the Prince of Wales performing the opening ceremony.
As stated on the Langham's history section of their website, the hotel was revolutionary in its use of electric lights, hydraulic lifts, and air conditioning. And every room had hot and cold water, just like more than I have.
Yeah, in this climate.
We love Victorian tap.
Sure. Yeah.
Without cholera. So. Okay. It was in 1867 that the hotel appointed American James Sanderson as the general manager. He was a former Union Army officer. The hotel then began to develop an elite clientele from America, including Mark Twain and Hetty Green, who was then known as the richest woman in America. Of course, it was not only Americans that frequented the luxurious destination. Other guests included Emperor Louis Napoleon III in 1971 and Charles Dickens in 1879.
Charles Dickens actually said it was the most expensive meal in London. It's like, I think you can afford that. It's well funny when rich people actually complain about prices.
Oh my God. Can you imagine like hanging out in the foyer to meet a sugar daddy and like bumping into Charles Dickens? You're like, please, sir, can I have some more? Money.
Yeah, could really do with that.
On August 30th, 1889, Arthur Conan Doyle was invited to a dinner party at the Langham by publishing agent J.M. Stoddart. Stoddart worked for Lippincott's monthly magazine in Philadelphia, and he had come to London in search of exciting English works of fiction to commission to attract their American readers. At the time, 30-year-old Conan Doyle was a doctor, but he was also established as a successful writer. Under his belt so far, he had The Mystery of Clumer and Micah Clarke. And of course, let's not forget, his first Sherlock Holmes novel, A Study in Scarlet. As stated in his biography, two more men were to join them at the dinner, an Irish MP named Gill and also none other than Oscar Wilde.
Conan Doyle was pretty starstruck in this company, understandably. But Oscar Wilde let him know that he had already read Micah Clarke, basically fangirling him at the table. This reassured him and took away some of the dreaded imposter syndrome. His autobiography states, "It was indeed a golden evening for me. Wilde, to my surprise, had read Micah Clarke and was pretty enthusiastic about it, so that I did not feel like a complete outsider." Publishing agent Stoddart, of course, had not just invited the men for a wild night out in London.
Although I'm sure it was pretty debaucherous.
Yes, I'm sure. He wanted the men to create two novels for Lippincott's magazine.
Here comes the birth of Doyle's Sherlock Holmes sequel, The Sign of the Four, and Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
Not bad for a night out in the Langham, hey?
Definitely.
Of course, Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray met huge controversy, and Doyle's The Sign of the Four didn't come with great success. Either way, we both know writers did pretty well after this, and that dinner at the Langham was a catalyst. There is a commemorative green plaque. This was unveiled on 19th of March 2010. The plaque reads, Oscar Wilde and Arthur Conan Doyle dined here with the publisher of Lippincott's magazine on 30th of August 1889, a meeting that led to The Sign of the Four and The Picture of Dorian Gray. What a meeting, hey?
That's so cool.
I actually did not know this until, I never even noticed that green plaque. I didn't know this story. I guess the real question is, Lake Geneva, Percy, Mary and Lord Byron, or night out at the Langham with Oscar and Arthur Conan Doyle?
Why would you ask such a difficult question? You know how passionate I feel about Mary Shelley. She is my number one, so I would go with that. But it's a close call.
Yeah, I think because they were writing horror stories, I'd be in Lake Geneva, but also wouldn't mind a night out in Soho with Oscar Wilde.
That would be so good, wouldn't it?
That would be so good. I hope they got together.
No, for real.
Seriously. Who wants some fan fiction of... oh my God, I just broke the chair. That's how excited I was about...
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Right. Stop wriggling around because it sounds bad.
Yeah, sorry. I got so excited by that I broke the chair. So...
Well, Transmission Roundhouse, I promise the chair isn't actually broken.
No,
The arms just went down in excitement, but they're back up again. Please keep giving us this studio. All right, let's calm ourselves down by all the exciting...
homoerotic fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm chill.
Yeah, you're doing okay?
I'm okay.
So, clearly, the Langham really was the place to be. If you could afford it, that is... And it continued to thrive until it was hit hard by the Great Depression. The owners of the hotel attempted to sell the building to the BBC. But as you can see today, the broadcasting house was built opposite instead, which I think is quite shady because they really tried to sell it to the BBC and the BBC was like, oh, we'll just go across the road instead. It was also used as a first aid station during World War II, but was severely damaged by bombings and many lives were lost as a result. When the war ended, it was used by the BBC to provide accommodation, as sometimes employees would need to stay close to their offices. Obviously, back in the day, we weren't as online, so if there was a big story that broke, you actually needed to be quite close by. The BBC eventually did purchase it in 1965.
Has the BBC ever let you stay there at the Langham? Take that as a no.
Not quite, but you never know.
Okay, so after all that, the BBC did purchase it anyway in 1965. Fine. In 1980, the BBC requested planning permission to demolish the building and replace it with grand-scale office development. They were unsuccessful in doing this, and then they sold the building in 1986 for $26 million to the Ladbroke Group. Can't believe they were going to knock it down. Well, I guess I've only seen it in the present day, so maybe it looked like a proper shithole, but... I guess it was sold for $26 million, couldn't look that bad.
The Langham reopened by 1991 after a £100 million refurb. It was then sold again to Great Eagle Holdings, who carried out extensions and even more refurbishments. In the years of 2004 to 2009, an additional £80 million restoration occurred. This restored the hotel back to its original and iconic form. What a transformation.
Wow. I wonder... Like, obviously, I can't remember when I moved to London. I think it was 2010. No, 2007. But I wasn't going out until, 2011, so I guess. We saw it in its iconic form. Mm-hmm. So this hotel has really been through it. World War II, many refurbishments. I mean, yeah, it's seen everything. Wow.
And you know what happens when you disturb spaces?
I do know, Tatum.
Shall we explore that?
Absolutely.
The hotel was known for its wealthy clientele. And if you were a royal or a famous musician, actor, artist, this would be your accommodation of choice. But what if you were a ghost?
Now, this is what you won't find on the Langham's fancy website. Don't sue us, please. We spoke earlier about BBC reporters occupying the building when needed, and many of them have accounted the strange goings-on during their stays. In October of 1973, BBC announcer James Alexander Gordon was ready for a cosy night in his hotel room after a long day at work. He checked into room 333 and soon drifted off into a deep sleep. However, he was later awoken suddenly and came face to face with a hovering fluorescent ball. To his terror, the ball began to take form. Gordon described the apparition as a clearly defined gentleman dressed in Edwardian clothing. Understandably, he was terrified, yet he summoned up the strength to ask the spirit who they were and what they wanted with him. He did not get this answer. Instead, the ghostly figure became enraged at his question and began to come with him with its arms outstretched and piercing, unblinking eyes. At this point, Gordon knew he had to escape, and he sprinted out of the room and down to the lobby. The employee at the reception desk met him with little sympathy and refused to accompany him back to his room. Hoping by now that the apparition had made a swift exit, Gordon braved the return to his room alone. To his dismay, the spirit had remained in his room, although the shape was less defined than the original encounter. When he recounted his experience to his colleagues at the BBC, several of them had had the same experience as him, all in room 333. I love that he went down to the foyer in his like £700 room or however much it costs for the smaller rooms. And the reception desk was like, no, I'm not coming back up with you.
I don't think that would happen now. It's a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
I remember watching, I can't remember what channel it was, but just sort of wanted to watch something easy before I was going to bed. And it was about luxury hotels. It was actually wild, the things that people do. Like, mm-hmm. they take their dogs for a walk. They bring them, you know, ridiculous things that people ask for, they have in their rooms. It's like, if somebody went down, even if you would think there was something going on mentally for somebody, mm-hmm. right? I just feel like you, especially now anyway, they would go and at least try and calm them down and make them feel safer. I'm very surprised to hear. When was this?
Oh, actually, this is 1973. So actually, the hotel hadn't had all its refurbs and stuff. So it was just kind of BBC accommodation. Yeah, so actually, I guess it wasn't, but.
Yeah, it's like being at the Ibis. And then I'm sorry, they probably would be like, I'm not going to escort you back to your room, like,
premiere in. Okay, yeah, fair enough. But I love that he went back up to the room and then was like, the ghost is still there, but it's less defined, so I'm just going to jump back into my bed.
Yeah, he must have been knackered. I mean, I have seen things at the end of my bed, but I think it's just depression.
Sorry. This is not the Babadook.
Babadook, dook, dook. I go to sleep and it's there. I wake up and it's there. During the Victorian era of the hotel, a wealthy doctor was said to have checked into room 333 with his new wife to celebrate their honeymoon. Unfortunately, this quickly turned sour, and the doctor murdered his wife and then subsequently took his own life. He manifests as a silver-haired Victorian gentleman in a black coat and cravat.
Another ghost who has been spotted on several occasions is said to be the spirit of a German prince dressed in military clothing. He was first spotted by BBC announcer Ray Moore, who described him as beefy with cropped hair, sporting a military-style jacket that buttoned up to the neck. Before the First World War, the prince jumped to his death from the window on the fourth floor. He can still be seen wandering the halls and walking through closed doors. The prince is said to be the most active ghost at the Langham, appearing all year round, and not only in room 333.
We mentioned at the beginning of the episode that Emperor Napoleon III stayed at the Langham. This was actually during his last days of exile. Well, legend has it, he never left. The emperor's favourite haunt happens to be in the basement, although he likely was not a resident down there prior to his death. He also appears as a glowing ball which manifests into the emperor. And let's just say, he will exile you right back.
If you want your sheets to shake better than any straight man ever could, you could always check into...
Sorry.
You could always check into 333 to experience a ghost rocking your mortal world. This phantom will physically tip you out of your bed. Kind of hot. Kind of rude. Only phantoms. A more recent occurrence happened to the England cricket team in 2014 during the Sri Lanka test. Team member Stuart Broad relayed to the Mail Online, "During the Sri Lanka test, I had to move rooms. It was so hot in the room, I just couldn't sleep. All of a sudden, the taps in the bathroom came on for no reason. I turned the lights on and the taps turned themselves off. Then when I turned the lights off again, the taps came on. It was very weird. It really freaked me out. I ended up asking to move rooms. Beely's girlfriend was pretty spooked too, and I know Moeen Ali's other half won't stay there because she's so frightened of the ghosts. One night, I woke up in the middle of the night around 1:30 and I was convinced that there was a presence in my room. It was the weirdest feeling. I turned the light on and I looked online and I could see that Matt Pryor was online too. I went to his room and he said exactly the same thing. He was wide awake as well, and neither of us could sleep because we were so spooked out. Matt was in a twin room, so I ended up sharing with him. I don't know if it was because we were talking about it more that we were sensing more was going on, but it is weird. It's definitely caused a few sleepless nights." And apparently none of the England cricket team will stay at the Langham anymore. I don't know why they carried on staying there. And I love that it's like cricket bros like bunking together because they were scared of the ghosts. Yeah, I just like the thought of those two men, like they're about to like play like a huge game of cricket. And they're both so spooked out about the ghost that they just like, let's bunk together.
Yeah, it's very cute.
It's very cute.
We love healthy male friendship.
When the Mail Online approached the Langham to comment, they declined. And there is nothing about the hauntings on their website. I think that they are very much, this place isn't haunted.
Yeah, because they probably don't want people turning up to their doorstep. I'm sure lots of ghost hunters or so on do still.
Well, actually, loads of people request to be in room 333, right?
Yeah, well, there apparently is no room 333 anymore. But obviously, it still exists. They just changed it. Because people were complaining about the ghost so much and there was all this hype about it, they've actually changed the room to 334 because people weren't booking 333. But that means they've obviously just changed every single room number on that floor.
Oh my gosh.
So it must just be an extra number or something now. Wait, how would that work? Can't do the math.
They must have just like moved everything up so there's one less room up.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really wild. But
people, it's not on, you know, like a lot of places, they will mention somewhere on the website the history and they sort of lean into things being spooky. You can't find it, can you, on the website anywhere?
No, because if the Mermaid Inn that I went to in Rye, they do a whole leaflet about the hauntings. They do like paranormal events. I guess that's more of like an inn, whereas this is a 5-star luxurious hotel that you pay so much money to stay at. So I guess you wouldn't really, if you was kind of scared of that kind of thing, you would not want to stay there.
It's interesting because 333 is actually, it's seen as quite a positive number. It's an angel number, right? The Holy Trinity.
It is. Oh my gosh, but so this weekend, I've taken a screenshot on my phone. This weekend, we visited the Langham and we were researching. I was doing non-stop research about room 333. Yesterday morning, I woke up and looked at my phone and it said 333, but I'd kind of sat up suddenly and like, my phone's usually faced down. I always face my phone down because people just message me throughout the night and I don't want to wake up. And I looked over and it was like, it's glowing 333. I had such a freak out because I was like, so I took a screenshot.
Got to get the receipts.
Got to get the receipts.
So you literally shot up at 3:33 in the morning, saw it on your phone.
Yeah, and my phone's always down, face down, because I put audiobooks on and I don't like it flashing and all that stuff. And it's like,
that is really creepy.
I was so creeped out. I was too scared to go to the toilet. Got Pepe, the sausage dog. I was like snuggling him and I put the nightlight on.
Yeah, fair enough.
But then I realised, like you're saying, it's actually 333 is not...
But why on earth that's never happened before after you've been researching for an entire day that night that happened? Anyway, we'll put it on Instagram so we've got the receipts.
It really freaked me out.
That is a very weird situation, but I just to sort of take a silver lining from it, 333 is a positive number. it's sent to you by your guardian angels. Seeing 333 signifies an upcoming change, maybe a career change, or yeah, any sort of like anything that you're wanting to change in your life. It can be a good sign to trust yourself and actually take those next steps.
So I'm okay then?
I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
So I've got some guardian angels looking out for me. I'm going to be successful and I'm going to...
You have to put in the work too, though. You can't just see a number and be like, yeah.
All I do is work all day, so yeah, that's fine.
It's all in the actions too. Perfect.
Because when Granny read my angel cards, she kind of turned one over and went, oh no, I still don't know what that is to this very day. I think I've spoken about this before, but...
Maybe we will start seeing 333 around. Let's see what happens.
I know, but actually, biblically, 333 represents the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
The number three relates to Jupiter, the planet of good fortune and rewards. And in love, it means your soulmate's close.
See? But I wasn't going to
Yeah, things come in threes. I don't know if you'll find your soulmate on
I've got Hinge, Tinder, and Raya. That's like three. So surely out of that three, I did have a threesome last week.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe you're in your three era,
which is
a good thing, I think.
Yeah. Hit me up for biblical studies and threesomes.
Yeah, if that's what you're looking for. Yeah, if you saw me on a dating app. No, you didn't. I like go on it, make a profile and then leave. Three minutes later.
Oh my God, don't. Can we stop? Because I'm getting freaked out.
Okay, let's move on. Okay. So,
but also my vibe also is to just double that to 666.
Yeah.
So I used to have 666 in my phone number and I was so proud of that. But sadly, I don't know what happened to that number. But anyway, 666, according to the book of Revelation, is the number of the beast and it's widely associated with the Antichrist. Oh my gosh. And Omen's one of my favorite films. Have you seen Omen? The Omen.
Yeah, I can't really remember.
Okay, so the really old one, I shouldn't say that. The original with Gregory Peck. Oh my God, I love Gregory Peck. I would do anything for him. And then there's a remake as well with Julia Stiles, who also, I'll do anything for you, Julia. So Damien, who is the Omen, he's got a 666 birthmark.
Oh, I have seen it.
Yeah, yeah. And loads of people are scared of that number as well.
Mm. Okay, so moving away from numbers, just to sort of, because we're coming to a close, the Langham. So we went and visited the Langham on Saturday. Right, okay. I know that interior is subjective, but if you like the Langham Hotel, the way that it's designed, the interior, you've got bad taste. I'm just going to say it.
I'm not obsessed with the marble. Like I think because we...
See, I like the marble. I like that there was purple marble. What I didn't like was everything else.
Was it purple?
Yeah, there was like purple elements into the marble.
It's just ugly.
It was really ugly.
The outside is so beautiful. Yeah. And like some of the chandelier outside, it's more beautiful. It's more gothic. There was just some really questionable choices.
There was a horrible carpet with terrible design on it. It was very like, you know, places that's very like brown and not nice leather. And we went to one of the toilets and there was this weird sort of like leathery brown things on the actual doors. Yeah. It was like being in a taxi.
But Diptyque hand cream, so.
That was nice.
But yeah, I would not, I think it's because we like the more like interesting gothic-y things. Like we'd, like a few weeks ago, we went to the St. Pancras Hotel to the gothic bar. Like that's our thing.
I think if you've got money, and maybe this, obviously it just comes to down to taste, but why on earth would you not go somewhere interesting like Claridge's or the St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel or somewhere that you're really immersed in another world? We walked into the Langham. I'm sorry, it was gross.
I know. And I was like, I've been there quite a lot of times, but never really sober. And I've always been able to get a drink really easily, like in one of the bars. But the bars were all closed. There was kind of just afternoon tea going on in the back bit. But we were like, I don't really want to spend £50 on two drinks here.
No, it was not. It was not
nice. Let's make a swift exit to Fitzrovia.
Yeah, well, we still made a good day of it. Obviously, yeah. We did get some photos. And we always like going to, if we can, we do like going to the venues that we're doing episodes on. So I'm still glad that we went. We made a day of it. We went around to Charlotte Street and went to Oscar Wilde's old haunts, which is fun.
And Dylan Thomas. I once did a Fitzrovia tour of like all the places that Dylan Thomas used to drink and write poetry and stuff. So I do love all that kind of stuff.
So yeah, I mean, you can just walk into the Langham. That's what we did.
We did look hot though.
I mean, I'm mostly always in like a tracksuit and I put on a dress just so I could go into the Langham.
Well, no one really said, hi, welcome to the hotel. Like, yeah, do you want to have a drink? Do you want to have anything? I'm not going to write a TripAdvisor about it, but I'm not going to Karen you the Langham. I would love to book room 334.
How much is it? Do you know?
I don't know, but I can probably stretch to it.
Speak for yourself. Yeah.
But probably on like Halloween or something, like if you got like a group of people in and you had like drinks and did like a little Samhain activity. I don't really want to fuck with that stuff anyway. So.
But you can see it on, yeah, I don't really agree with that stuff ethically, but there is actually a YouTube that we watched of these, a load of these Americans doing their sort of ghosting in 333. And the hotel room looked disgusting.
Oh my God, it looks so Premier Inn.
It was awful.
Yeah, I don't
understand. All right, okay, maybe we should stop.
We need to stop slagging off the hotel because we respect the hotel and the ghosts and the history. But the history of the hotel now, to me, is way more exciting than going into that hotel. It's kind of a bit of an anti-climax. We did do a little bit of exploring. We went down to where they've got like a cabinet of histories. So I took some photos of that, which we will add to our Instagram if you are interested and if you can't make it to the Langham yourself.
And lots of ghosts there. I wonder whether in 300 years the ghost that will be appearing would be sort of Hayden style naked men running around the hotel.
I mean, yeah, it does appeal. That appeals to me, to be honest.
Yeah.
We would love to carry this on and do several like different haunted hotels. We have a lot more of exciting hotels to bring to you. Haunted hotels we've stayed at ourselves.
Yeah, and if you have any stories,
yeah,
please send them to us. We'd love to hear.
This is just the beginning of haunted hotels.
Okay, so thanks for the ghost, Langham. Not the interior.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe or follow on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on.
If you want to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and you can follow us on Instagram at honeyinthehex.
If you have any of your own folklore stories, we would love it if you would share them with us. Until next time, Coven.